Good morning, you're in tune with What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin, Jeff Eason, and Fred Mills. Today, we're talking about lyrics and music. What makes them great? And some of our favorite examples of our artists here on 88.7.
You know, lyrics are a little bit different than poetry because you have to be able to do them to music to really pull them off. So there's maybe, whereas poetry, especially modern poetry, has gone off on different tangents, music kind of pulls it back into the traditional poetic meter, and there's a lot more rhyming going on. And so you're limited by some constraints. And I think a lot of today's lyricists would do well to go back to some of the classic ones. You know, Paul Simon, I think, is just one of the best lyricists there's ever been. He can write about all these different subjects and yet make them kind of personal through his eyes. More modern examples for me would be Tom Waits is a great lyricist. And today, I think they're a little bit few and far between, mainly because everything has become so literal in music.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Paul Simon, Jeff. NPR recently had a segment on Shakespeare's sonnets, talking about the poetic tradition and how they've stood the test of time for 400 years running now. And so they invited listeners to send in their examples of lyrics or turns of phrase that should stand the test of time for another 400 years. And then a lot of the usual suspects like Beatles and Dylan were in there. Paul Simon was one of them too, though. So was Bob Marley. And it got me thinking, aside from the music context, because it does, as you say, it has to fit the music and the meter and the rhythm and everything, what makes a great lyric work? And I figured it operates on two levels pertinent to what we just said. It's got a poetic and rhythmic resonance in your mind as you hear it. So it could be very simple, like, if I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true? You know, Beatles. Or it could be something more complex, like a Dylan lyric. But more important, I think it's got to have a personal meaning to you, the listener. It might reflect your own life, your own experiences somehow. Or it offers that kind of the proverbial, you know, shoulder to lean on, where the person singing it to you is, for the duration of that song, is your friend and your confidant, and you're sharing that moment. And those are the kinds of songs that can bring you to your knees. I mean, I thought of Percy Sledge's "When a Man Loves a Woman" as a perfect example. If you go listen to those lyrics, when a man loves a woman deep down in his soul, she can bring him such misery if she plays him for a fool. He's the last one to know loving eyes can't ever see. I mean, I can just picture hearing that song come over the radio as Percy Sledge was singing that, and guys everywhere just breaking down. It's like, he knows how it feels, man. He knows how it feels.
Well, I think as a journalist, I'm privileged a lot to get to interview great songwriters. And I think as a musician as well, it probably colors the questions I ask them. But two of the things that I always want to know when I call someone who writes is, for some reason, I want to know what their voice sounds like, because people do speak differently than they sing. And the other is, I want to know how they write. And so one of my questions is always, how do your songs come to you? How do you do that? You know, how you're writing. And I think that's a personal thing of mine, is I really want to know. And it almost always falls in two categories. The lightning bolt. No, it just came to me in my head and I had to run for the napkin, you know, to write it down, because, or it would just go away. Or they really have to work at it. There doesn't seem to be any in between with songwriting. I thought that was very interesting. Other people, it's one or the other. You know, they go and they sit down and they plan it and they say, I'm going to write. No. And I always wonder when I call someone, what are they going to be? You know, and then I listen to some of my great writers, like Townes Van Zandt. You know, how did I think he drank a lot. You know, maybe he was a really remarkable person, but had substance abuse.
He tipped back a few from time to time.
Yeah, I think so.
He knew his poetry, too.
Yes, he did.
He was a very scholarly man before he did music.
Oh, I know. And then, you know, you look at just all the Iris DeMint, who was writing her songs at the Kmart counter. What brilliant, you know, the way she puts words together, and yet she hated school and never really, it was just all out of her head. You know, it's just so interesting the way people from so many different places can put so many different kinds of words together.
When you've interviewed people, have you found them resisting imposing meaning on their lyrics? I know a lot of songwriters, you know, don't really want to I don't know, always reveal the sources of inspirations behind specific lyrics, or even shine a light too brightly on what was going through their mind or what they were experiencing at the time. It's almost like they're afraid if they pull the veil back too far, the mystery will be gone and the song won't be as important to us. Do you ever encounter that in talking to people?
No, absolutely not. And if they do, they don't tell me that. But I think for the most part, people are very open and honest about the process with which they write and what inspires them.
Yeah, I interviewed Daryl Scott one time, and one of the questions I asked him was about his song, The Man Who Could Have Played Bass for Sha-Na-Na. And it's totally based on a true story of a musician he met who played in this kind of 50s knockoff band. And his big regret was that he could have had an audition with Sha-Na-Na, but he wanted to stay close to his family. And it's a great song, and it's based on a real incident, but it's about more than that. It's about regrets that we all have, chances that we all pass up. And I think that's what the mark of great songwriting is. You take something that could just be an incident or a little piece of your daily life and make it something bigger. And I think young songwriters should concentrate on some of these sort of symbolic things. Like when Joni Mitchell wrote, "I wish there was a river I could skate away on," she wasn't talking about skating. She's talking about a means of escaping yourself, you know, a means of getting away from something that is bothering you. And so when I said that I think a lot of young songwriters today are way too literal, that's what I meant.
You know, that's a good point. I was listening to, of all things, on the drive down from Asheville to the radio station, Don Henley's Boys of Summer. And there's a line in there that everybody knows. I think most people at this point can quote it by heart. Saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice in my head said, "Don't look back, you can never go back." And it's talking about the regrets he's having over this, on one level, of this summer love he's had and how it kind of went south and he's kind of wandering around. But on the other hand, it's a very literal image of him driving down the highway, seeing this and having this moment of self-reflection that I'm sure we've all had, you know, whether it be doubts, insecurities, or just, you know, having to resolve that, yeah, we do have to move on in life. And that's what I was talking about a minute ago. It's got personal resonance to you. It's not an abstract thing like you mentioned. It's something that it could be couched as a metaphor, but it still gets to the heart of a very real event happening or process.
I think it's just another level of talent that people have, that ability with words. You know, this is a room full of writers here with Joe, but it's also in music, it's that great game and the ability to process words in a way that come out that are going to excite other people and tell your story. I mean, you look at people like, and some people it's just a cathartic thing too. I mean, you look at someone like Billy Joe Shaver, whose wife died, I believe, of cancer, and in the same time period, his son died a tragic death, and he went up on a mountain and wrote a song about how he had squandered his existence, and wrote, and he recreated himself from that record and from being able to express himself that way. So I think writing for music is a lot like writing for all of us who write for whatever, in that it's a means of, just an amazing means of expression, putting words together.
We had a segment on What It Is once a while back, Jeff and Joe and I, in which we talked about, I think specifically about how sometimes songs of heartbreak become some of the greatest songs ever because it's that intensity of emotion. And what you're talking about, Billy Joe losing his wife and everything, I was listening to song by Patti Smith called My Madrigal from the song album Gone Again from 96, and the song's about her husband Fred Smith, who died, and in a sense this was sort of like a comeback album for her. It had been a while since she'd recorded, and there's a line in there that just brings me to my knees, man. It's she's talking about Fred. We waltz beneath motionless skies, all heaven's glory turned in your eyes. You pledged me your heart till death do us part. And, you know, who cannot feel the genuineness in that, her sorrow, and yet she doesn't sing it like, "Oh, feel sorry for me, I've lost my husband." She's singing it so anybody that's ever felt a loss can share in that and kind of take solace. And that's what artists are supposed to do. They're supposed to reflect our lives, our experiences, and also, give us ways to work through them and draw meaning from them.
Another artist that works through loss of late, Elvis Perkins, who was interviewed on NPR about his new record, Elvis Perkins in Deerland. And, you know, he lost his parents. His mother was in the Flight 93, I think, that went down
on
9/11.
Yeah.
And his father, Anthony Perkins, had died. And so he wrote these lyrics. And this was more of the open-ended sort of approach. The interviewer asked him about the lyrics to a song and gave his interpretation of the lyrics. And Elvis Perkins, you could tell, specifically did not want to interject and say what he thought the lyrics meant. He let the interviewer go ahead and give his interpretation of the song, and then Elvis Perkins said, "Oh yeah, that's it exactly. That's much better than what I would have said." And
sort of what I was talking about earlier. Some artists don't really want to impose their meaning too literally by explaining themselves, and it's great when they can get their thoughts and their feelings across that well that the interviewer got it. You know,
One of my favorite new lyricists is Nellie Mackay, because she uses all different kinds of influences from Broadway to rap and everything like that. And in one of her songs, she does something which is hardly ever done anymore. It's the use of irony and sarcasm to say one thing but mean another. And the song is called "I Want to Get Married," and the lyrics are, "I want to get married. Yes, I need a spouse. I want a nice leave it to beaverish golden retriever and a little white house. I want to get married. I need to cook meals. I want to pack cute little lunches for my Brady Bunches, then read Danielle Steele." I mean, it's a way of saying one thing when you mean the complete opposite. It's just great, I think.
She needs to get in a song circle with Sean Colvin, and Sean can sing "Sonny Came Home" in response to that.
A couple of other songwriters that I like to point to that have some notable lyrics are fairly new on the scene. Benji Faree.
Yeah, yeah.
And you spell that BenjyFerree. And the song "Fear," just go look up the lyrics to the song "Fear" and listen to the song. It's hilarious. You listen to the song and you don't realize at first perhaps how dark and actually really ironic and funny the lyrics are. Also, a very young fellow, Eugene McGinnis, very snappy, and he's obviously listened to some Morrissey.
I've just been looking through Bruce Hornsby's newest recording and was looking through his lyrics, and I never read his lyrics without listening to the music before. There's some seriously dark, he really hits some heavy-duty topics in Levitate that I don't think I would have really thought about it so much if I hadn't read them instead of. So it's an interesting thing to go back and read your favorite lyrics or lyrics of any kind instead of having listened to them.
Well, we don't have poetry anymore, so we've got music, right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
As a nation, does anybody really go to the written word as far as, I mean, you know, the poetic tradition goes back throughout human history, and I would say that probably music and film have taken its place.
Well, we're going to have all the people that are into poetry slams calling in and complaining about that.
I know, the slams are healthy. And
so, yeah, I think the poetic tradition is definitely taking a turn. You know, we're not sort of, you know, back in the Robert Frost days anymore.
No, I know. In publishing terms, it's one of the least sold genres of books these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Has that always been true?
No. It was just right up there with, you know, fiction, nonfiction, history, poetry. I mean, even as far as 100 years ago, you know,
right,
with Robert Frost and Walt Whitman and some of these, they were big sellers in their own day.
Yeah.
Well, Rob McEwen is probably the last big time selling poet that there is.
It's telling too that a musician's collected lyrics can become a bestseller now. I mean, whether it be Dylan or Springsteen or the Beatles lyrics, those are consistently well received by the public. Whereas a lot of quote unquote poets have to resort to, you know, like private pressings and everything. But, you know, it's the soundtrack of our lives, the music, and with the with the spread of radio and the electrically recorded devices such as LPs and compact cassettes and compact discs, and now hard drives and iPods, you know, music is ubiquitous. And it makes it possible, no matter where you are, a snatch of poetry can come to your mind. As I think of my favorite all-time line is from Springsteen's "The River," and it goes, "Is a dream a lie if it don't come true, or is it something worse?" And that expresses so much of my life personally, and of the human experience as well. And the fact that we can access this on demand from our cell phones any time, you can call up a song, take an inspiration from the poetic element in it. And it's kind of hard to do that with straight poetry unless you're carrying a book around.
Well, there's some songs, too, that make it into public events all the time that are, I mean, going back to Towns Van Zandt, like the song, If I Needed You. What a beautiful love song. Yeah. What a beautiful love song. How many weddings have you been to where they, I mean, I actually remember quite a while back going to Ricky Skaggs and Sharon White's wedding in Nashville, Tennessee, and they sang that to each other on the steps as part of their ceremony. And I think that's a regular thing. So, I mean, people... Music becomes more than what it starts out to be. I'm sure there's other songs that have become parts of other ceremonies and things.
Well, perhaps these are the songs that will be here for another 400 years, like Shakespeare's sonnets. In that sense, these are our generation's sonnets.
What do you think? Email us whatitis at wncw.org. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin, Fred Mills, Jeff Eason. Until next time.